Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Özil marca. Mesut Özil.
No fucking way. You made me look a right cunt.
This is Arsecast Extra.
Hello there, welcome to another Arsecast Extra. As always, with James from Gunner Blog. I think. Badly morning to you.
Do we still have to do it? Do we still have to do a podcast? I'm so sad, Andrew.
I think people would forgive us, perhaps, if we decided, you know, today, fuck it, let's not do it. But at the same time, a problem shared is a problem that we get to talk about over and over again.
Okay, something good. A problem shared is a problem. And we've got problems.
We certainly do. Maybe this will be cathartic for us and the listeners, or maybe by the end of it, we're going to be going, oh, fucking fuck. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. How do you feel this morning? What's it like when you, if I was to ask you, what is the one word or one emotion that you would use to describe how you're feeling this morning in the cold light of day, what would that be?
Ooh, one word. I would say I feel deflated.
Okay, that's a good one.
Deflated, I think, because I feel like, yeah, no, I'll leave it. One word. Well, what about you?
I'm trying to do, yeah, trying to combine maybe two words together to make one word. So I think deflated or disenchanted or dismayed is good, but I'm also quite angry. So whether I'm furious and deflated, I could be furflated.
Yeah.
Furflated, I think, is where I am with this.
Furflated. Mm. I think everyone's feeling a bit furflated.
Yeah.
I mean, I've also got tonsillitis, so that's not helping.
Oh, no, Why? Yeah, why? Why have you got that?
I don't know. Just been jabbing my tonsils with a stick, with a big infected stick.
I don't have any tonsils.
Do you not?
No.
Oh, that's the trick. That's what I need to do, get rid of them.
Yeah, they were taken out much younger when I was a child, and I woke up during the operation.
No.
Yeah, it's one of the things that I remember most vividly from my childhood. Now, it could have been an anesthetic-induced dream or hallucination, but I distinctly remember waking up in the operation and seeing the surgeon or the guy throwing my now useless tonsils into a kind of a yellow bucket, which was beside the bed on which, or the operating table. And then I went, I'm back again. But I remember it to this day. Yeah. Yeah.
I have tonsils. So before anyone jumps on Twitter and says, oh, James, can you hurt yourself? Can you suffer some misfortune so good things happen to Arsenal? I tried, guys. I got my tonsils all infected for you. And yet, they still let us all down.
It could be, James, that the fortunes of our football team are not really in any significant way tied in with you being in searing pain.
I mean, that seems unlikely, but we may have to give that theory some credence.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
So you're angry. You don't sound angry. You're not angry with me. That's a relief.
No, look, we're friends here and, you know, we can talk this out between ourselves. No, I'm not angry with you for not hurting yourself worse to make us win yesterday. Not at all. I'm not.
Who are you angry with?
I think I'm angry with Arsene Wenger.
Oh.
Look, I like and respect Arsene Wenger a great deal. I think he's a brilliant man. I think some of the abuse and vitriol leveled at him is irrational and very unpleasant at times. I think people are able to make their points, or should be able to make their points, about their disenchantment with him in a much better way, right? Mm-hmm. But yesterday, having seen that team do what they did against that Manchester United team, you can't come to any other conclusion than this is on the manager. This is the team that he built. These are the players that he put together. That's the team selection that he made. The performance or lack of it in a game in which we should have been hammering home our title credentials was absolutely abject. And that ultimately comes back to the manager. Right? You can say the players didn't do it, and the players didn't do it, and too many of them didn't perform yesterday. There were individual mistakes. There were players who were nigh on anonymous, who just didn't show up, who hid during the game. And you can put some blame on them. Absolutely you can. But this is not, for example, a situation like at Liverpool, where Jurgen Klopp has come in and people are going, well, Klopp's not really a very good manager, is he? You know, look at what's happening at Liverpool. But, you know, he's inherited a bag of shite from Brendan Rodgers, and it'll be a while before he can put his own stamp on that team. And if Liverpool are that shit in 2 years' time, then you go, okay, there's a problem there with Jurgen Klopp. But with Arsene Wenger, these are entirely his players, players that he's put his faith in, and players who didn't repay that faith in any way, and who let themselves, who let the manager and let the club down. But the book stopped. Where does the book stop? And I think it's with Arsene Wenger, and you know, I'm angry with him that he wasn't able to get more out of his team yesterday in that game.
Yeah, I think that's fair, because I think, you know, especially when those lineups come in, there's no doubt really about who's got the strongest side on paper, is there?
No, I mean, look at the United side. Look at who's absent for United.
Such a list of injured players and some names in that United side that I think are unfamiliar to even the most ardent football fan. And I think that's what you say is right about the manager, because we're really out of excuses at the moment. I mean, in terms of the injury situation, you know, Santi Cazorla is probably the only major absentee. You almost can't include Jack Wilshere in that. Mm. We've had plenty of money to spend. He's had kind of free reign in the transfer market. This is the team that he's assembled. So if it's falling short, then that is entirely really down to him. And even if it's the players who are responsible for failing to perform, it's his ultimate responsibility to motivate them. And they didn't look very motivated yesterday.
No, they didn't. I mean, that was really worrying, the fact that they were so lethargic. I mean, I mentioned it in the blog today, but this isn't to suggest that Aaron Ramsey was in any way better than anyone else, but he had the ball and he was looking for movement. He was looking for players to make a pass to, and there was just none. Players were standing watching, and it was really, really bad. And you know, actually, when Elneny came on, it was quite curious to watch him make a pass and drop off or move into another area of the pitch to try and get the ball back. Mm. And it was so obvious because nobody had been doing that for the whole game. It was so bad. You know, you think about Varela, who's the right back, on a yellow card after 9 minutes for a rugby tackle on Alexis Sanchez, because he was so terrified of Alexis getting away from him, he fucking rugby tackled him. And what did we do? Nothing. Alexis didn't try to go outside him once. You know, it's just maddening. They had Rojo at left back, who's just back from an injury, and two central midfielders at centre half.
Yeah.
And we pick a dynamic, pacey front three with Welbeck, Alexis and Walcott. And what problems did we cause them? None. None whatsoever. None of those players really took any responsibility. Actually, that's not really fair for me to say. Alexis tries. We know he tries, and he's just so badly out of form. Badly out of form. Welbeck, I don't think we can really criticise him too much after being out for 10 months with injuries. Come back, he scored 2 goals in 2 Premier League games.
Yeah.
And 2 very, very good, very tidy headed goals to give us that bit of an added threat. But Walcott, like, where the fuck was he? What was it? What? Seriously, where was he? The first time I noticed him was when he lost the ball, which led to their goal.
His new book is going to be called TJ and the Never-Ending Game of Hide and Seek. I think he had 18 touches in the game yesterday. I was surprised it was that many, to be honest, when I saw the statistic.
Actually, there was a Football 365 statistic. Hang on, I'll get this out here. Football 365, 1 second. Boom, boom, boom. Somebody sent it to me here.
Okay. The thing about Walcott, I mean, again, it comes back to the manager, because that's a a big selection gamble that he made, was to bring Theo in as a striker, you know.
I mean, I could see why he did it, you know, because Giroud hasn't been scoring. You got to do something. I was even sort of vaguely advocating it myself, despite the fact I remain wholly unconvinced about Walcott as a centre forward and as a footballer in general. But
Theo skeptic.
Yeah, Theo skeptic. And, you know, I could see why he did it. But when you pick a guy for a big game at Old Trafford and he basically hides, as he has done too many times in his Arsenal career, it's fucking infuriating. Here's the stats. Walcott had no shots, no chances created, and 6 passes completed in 63 minutes. He touched the ball 17 times and managed to lose possession on 10 occasions. I mean, what the fuck?
It doesn't read well, does it?
No.
He was pretty diabolical, I thought.
Yeah.
Walcott, pretty bad.
Okay, but do we not know this already about Theo Walcott? Do we not know that he is a hugely limited footballer? So what do we do? Do we blame, you know, do we blame him for being what he is? Or do we blame somebody for insisting on picking him? Because you know what? I go back to the end of last season when Giroud had this goal-scoring drought because he was the only forward that we had left. Mm. And he was tired and, you know, he played himself out of form, as happens to him. And Walcott came in at centre forward against West Brom, was it, in one of the final games of the season?
It was.
Scored
indeed,
a hat trick. Scored
a hat trick. A very disinterested Julian Lescott.
Yeah, they didn't give a fuck on that day. And he came in and scored good goals, in fairness to him. And all of a sudden, Arsene Wenger went, hey, Theo Walcott is a centre forward. I've tried it twice before and it's gone okay. There was one game against Tottenham in the FA Cup where he played really well, then, you know, did his cruciate, which is just about peak Theo. And he said, okay, cup final. And Walcott on the day of the cup final, yes, had a good game against, let's face it, one of the worst teams that anybody has ever seen anywhere when you look at what's happening to that Villa side now. You know, I'm taking nothing away from our FA Cup win because it was fantastic and I enjoyed the shit out of it. It was brilliant to win an FA Cup final that way. But let's not pretend that that was some indication that Theo Walcott is the answer to all our prayers at centre forward. He stuck with it a bit this season, and he had, what, 2 good games, one at Leicester and one against Manchester United?
Of all people, yeah.
And that's it. That's his soul. That's the sum total of his contribution as a centre forward.
Hey, yeah. I mean, in some respects, you do wonder if that hat-trick against West Brom was not a great thing to happen, because it enabled Arsene Wenger, when the summer came around, to sign Walcott up to a new deal and pursue this idea of him as the alternative to Giroud instead of bringing in somebody else who might have been significantly more effective. And we've invested a lot of money in Walcott now in terms of that wage. And that's not a salary that anyone will take off our hands too easily or too lightly. So you feel that he's... You know, the investment's significant enough that he's going to be around for the long haul.
If this was a video podcast now, you could see me holding my head in my hands when you said that.
But it's true, isn't it? I mean, we've put a lot of money down on Theo now.
Yeah, well, you know, people have made the point that he only ever plays really well when he's looking for a new contract.
Yes, the Flamini effect.
Yeah.
Which has yet to come into force this season for Flamini. But I was really exasperated with Walcott yesterday. And the thing is, I know that Giroud is out of form. I know he's struggling for goals. But so is Walcott, desperately. Mm. You know, we've talked about it on here before. He's got something like 2 in about 22 or something like that.
When is the last time Walcott had something that you could actually consider form?
Yeah, I mean, a long time ago. I feel like there was a brief period back in the autumn, maybe, where he looked like he'd sprung into life, but it was a handful of games. And maybe that doesn't even qualify as form.
Yeah.
And then prior to that, it was summer, and prior to that, he was injured, you know? So it's, I don't know. The last time I think of him playing really well was when we gave him his previous contract.
Yeah.
You know, not the last one, the one before. When he was playing extremely well, scored 21 goals that season, didn't he? And, but then got injured.
Yeah.
Because that's what happens.
That's what he does. But look, yeah.
But I mean, he was a selection decision that didn't pay off. Gabriel would also qualify as one of those.
Yeah, that was bad. He was bad. He was really bad. I think he was, in some ways, lucky not to give away a penalty. Mm-hmm. Was very close to being a penalty. He got turned inside out by Rashford, who just ran at him. It wasn't anything complicated. Then there was the first goal... I'm not like hugely. It was a bit of a miscue, but he was moving at speed and the ball came across, and you know that can
I had
happen.
More issues with the way that goal came about in terms of Walcott losing the ball, dribbling out defence. Monreal was quite isolated when the cross came in, and positionally wasn't brilliant either. So that was less on Gabriel for me, but I agree he was poor, and particularly on that second goal.
Well, the second goal was ridiculous because the ball, you know, the centre halves are in the right positions more or less. Gabriel is looking at Rashford. He's looking straight at him. It's not like the guy's ghosted in behind him. He's got him in front of him. He's goal side of him for a few seconds and then simply lets him go. He heads in and Gabriel turns around to Koscielny and he's like, "What the fuck are you doing?" You're like,
yeah, Gabriel behaves as if he expects Koscielny to take Rashford, but he can see both Koscielny and Rashford and can see that's not happening.
Yeah.
I mean, it smacks of a player who knows they fucked up, essentially, the way he reacted to me.
Well, you know, I don't know. Maybe it smacks of a player who's too fucking thick to know that he's the one that fucked up.
Maybe. I mean, that's a worry. I mean, what's going on at centre-back? Because it did seem, prior to Gabriel's injury, like Arsene was, you know, picking him fairly regularly. Mm. And then as soon as he's come back to fitness, I mean, he didn't throw him in for the Barca game, but he's back in at Old Trafford. What's happening there, do you think? What's the manager thinking?
I don't know. I think what he's got this season are three centre-halves who are not playing anywhere near as well as they could be. You know, Mertesacker, two mistakes, 1.5 mistakes anyway against Barcelona. Mm. And I think that's why he picked Gabriel yesterday.
He was very angry after the Barcelona game, wasn't he?
He was. Particularly when he spoke about that Monaco goal. This is just like what happened against Monaco, and it was quite similar, I think, when Mertesacker got caught a little bit high up the pitch. So I think that was really in his mind, and that's why he picked Gabriel. But I don't think Koscielny has been playing particularly well recently. I think you could look at him for the third goal and say, hey, if you're going to try and block a shot, if you go at it front on, there's more chance of you making a block. If you go at it side on, there's less of you for to make that block. And then, look, it sort of skids off your tits and into the goal pass check. Mm. You know, I don't think his defending was very good at all there. I know there were issues with the midfield allowing Herrera to make that run. But I think what's happening is that the centre halves, all three of them, are becoming a little bit error prone, or have been a bit error prone this season, and the manager doesn't know what his best combination is. If it were me, I would stick with Koscielny and Mertesacker, simply because they've been there, they've done that, they've worn the t-shirt, they've had the experience, and I think they're the best partnership that we have at centre half until the summer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I don't think it's something that you couldn't address in the summer in the transfer market. I don't think, you know, I think there are better centre halves out there probably than what we've got. But for what we've got at the moment, you know, Mertesacker was missed yesterday, despite his mistakes against Barcelona. That calm and that assurance, I would have liked to have seen that in the side. So those were the first two goals. I mean, the thing is, 3-2 ultimately. I mean, is that a scoreline? It feels like that flatters us, really.
A little bit, because you could see how United were going to score goals. You couldn't really see how we were, other than set pieces or a corner or something like that, because we created very little. There was that great Monreal chance early on in the game, a beautiful ball from Mesut Ozil. Monreal maybe should have done better with that, although it was a good save from De Gea. But look, set piece for Danny Welbeck, and at 2-1 at halftime. Okay, look, it's shit to go 2-0 down, but we get a goal back not long before halftime, and
that
you
seemed like a massive goal.
Yeah, you felt like if we were going to get anything from the game, we had to score before halftime, and we did. But you know, there was no change really in the way that we played in the second half. There was no dynamism. There was no real ambition to the football that we played. Same issues were prevalent, weren't they? The lack of movement, the lack of ability to get through the United lines, particularly in the final third. It was just, I think Graham Souness called it insipid. The football was insipid, and I think that sums it up perfectly.
I think it was really interesting because I was obviously following the game on social media as well. And at half time, so start of the second half, there were all these rallying cries from fans, pundits, ex-players. What a massive 45 minutes this is in Arsenal's season. You know, this is about them going and proving that they can be contenders. You know, have they got the fight? Have they got the stomach to come back at Old Trafford? And the answer was no. And it was so emphatically no that it was just, I mean, it was gutting, really.
Yeah, yeah.
It was gutting.
We were just unable to get on top of a United side that was... I know Arsene Wenger made some kind of point about, well, hey, that side costs a lot of money. So fucking what if it costs a lot of money? It doesn't make any difference whatsoever when you look at their side on paper and you look at our side on paper. I know that's not how football is played, but those players should have been capable of more, and the manager should have been capable of getting more from those players. In circumstances like that, when the title, I won't say it's on the line, but certainly this is going to have a huge impact on our ability to do it. It'll have a huge impact, I think, on our confidence levels, our which must be like minimal at the moment anyway. You know, just so fucking, it was just so bad.
So listen, I'm going to play Arsene's advocate just for a moment.
Okay.
I don't think anyone else is. It was an insipid performance. Do you think that has anything to do with the fact that we had the very draining game against Barcelona earlier in the week?
No.
Is that why we were covering less ground and less ready?
No. We had 5 days. These are professional footballers. We had 5 days. He made changes to his team. He brought in Walcott, you know, who should have run his hole off, but didn't. He brought in Welbeck, who did run his hole off and scored us a goal, but looked like a man who's been out for 10 months at times, which, of course, he has. He brought in Gabriel at the back, who made mistakes. You know, I don't think the Barcelona game had anything to do with it, and United played on Thursday.
That's the great, you know, cancel out that they played on Thursday, and I think that's it. I mean, I don't consider that valid, but I just hadn't heard that point made too much.
Yeah, and I don't think it was even about running around or you know, it was about being unable to perform. Not so much running here and there, because any cunt can fucking run anywhere. You know, if that's all it comes down to, you just get super fit guys to run anywhere. But it was just the timidness of the football that we played, the lack of ambition, the lack of confidence, the lack of anything that you might call incisive. I mean, when Mesut Ozil scored in the 69th minute, there were 26 minutes left in that game. 26 minutes. That's a huge amount of time for a team to really pile on some pressure and to have a go, to rescue the season. I mean, we can't assume that the players weren't aware of how big a game this was and what the implications, what the ramifications would have been if they didn't win this game. And even then, they couldn't rise themselves. Even then, they couldn't perform. So what does it come down? I mean, what do you think it is? It's not like, I don't buy into the idea that they don't want to win it or that they don't have the ambition to win it. Of course they do. They want to go out and they want to win every game, but why couldn't they perform yesterday, especially in those circumstances? You know, with 26 minutes left of the game, fucking pile on the pressure. Really make United work. And we didn't. We had one effort on target and it was the tamest header you'll ever see in 26 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, and it is, you're absolutely right. It's a lack of quality as much as it's, or more so than it's a lack of effort, you know. And these are players with real ability who aren't producing. And I wonder, I mean, this is off the top of my head, but I kind of feel like we have a manager who's, one of his exceptional skills is when a team is clicking and when his team is firing, he's very good at maintaining that. You know, he's a guy who took a team through a season unbeaten because with momentum, he's outstanding. He can go on these prolonged runs, but it requires a team that's perfectly honed. And sometimes that process happens by accident. You know, you look at the start of 2015, we had a brilliant calendar year, and so much of that was contingent on the partnership of Coquelin and Cazorla, which was never planned, and just came together, sort of an alchemy that you couldn't have set out as a strategy. But we found a team. It had Aaron Ramsey on the right wing, which ostensibly made no sense and yet seemed to work. It just clicked perfectly into place almost by chance. And when it did, Arsene did a superb job of maintaining that momentum, of keeping that up.
Mm.
But when that came apart in the winter, in November, and that team began to disintegrate due to injuries and other problems and lack of form, primarily injuries, admittedly, he hasn't since been able to recompose it. He hasn't since been able to find a formula that will work. And the team don't have that same flow, that same... Those automatisms that Per Mertesacker talked about aren't there.
Mm.
And it's difficult to understand why that is, but I feel like we have a coach who's brilliant once he's got that in place and can fill his teams with confidence and fill them with belief that they can do it, but he requires that infrastructure there in the side. And at the moment, it's not there and it's a mess.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But it's what I was really interested by yesterday, because... Losing at Old Trafford, you know, as poor as United are, that's something that can happen. Losing at any away game in the Premier League can't happen. But at full time, there was a real, real outpouring of anger from almost every Arsenal fan that I could see or that I could speak to.
Mm.
And why do you think it's been such a big, big reaction to this one game?
Because I think that when you look at this season... You look at the chance that we have to win the title.
Mm-hmm.
With Tottenham and Leicester as the two main rivals, and I don't think we should forget Man City either because they're there.
Yeah.
You look at this team, you look at the players that are in it, you think this is a wonderful chance for you to go on and win the title. And I watched your At the Whistle video.
Mm-hmm.
And you're absolutely right to say this is an amazing chance. And what it has done, I think, is confirmed this fear that many people have that when push comes to shove, that when the pressure is really on, we just can't perform. We just can't step up. And even with those world-class players in the side, like Ozil, like Alexis Sanchez, you know, who's really struggling at the moment as well, we still can't do it against the worst United side that we've played in X amount of years. I mean, this was a brilliant opportunity to go to Old Trafford. And the problem, I think, is that it's not so much that we were beaten, is that we beat ourselves in a way with the mistakes that we made. And that makes you, all you can do, the only assumption you can make when that happens is that we just simply can't cope with the pressure, that we choke. And that those are the reasons why we lose games like this. And those are the reasons why we won't win the title. So I think that's what it was. And I think as well, a familiarity. That this has happened before, and it's happened before, and it's happened before. And here we are again. Even with, like, everything. You couldn't ask for it to be a better situation for Arsenal this season. You just really couldn't. If someone had offered you this at this time last year or at the start of the season, you go, yes, I'll take that with two hands. You know?
Yeah, of course.
And you know, what we've done is, I don't know, we've fucking bottled it again. Now, there are 11 games to go, and there's a lot of points to play for, but really, the way that we're playing, can you see us taking as many points as we need and the other side's dropping those points?
Well... I mean, no, is the short answer. I mean, you know, and the fixture list is not easy. You know, we've got games, I mean, next weekend, of course, North London Derby, isn't it? I mean, it almost doesn't bear thinking about.
Jesus.
Also got to go to the Etihad. I think we have to go to West Ham. You know, there are tricky games on the agenda still. You know, the running was always going to be quite hard. This period was always going to be tricky.
Mm.
And the problem is that we didn't build up any sort of cushion at all. And I think when you look at the other sides who are in the race with, you know, for weeks now, it's felt like we've said, well, we're in touching distance. But we should be out in front, really.
Yes, yes, you're right.
We should be clear. We should be over the hill. We should be, you know, we should be out of sight. We should be looking back. Because look at the squad of Leicester. Tottenham are getting a lot of praise, but their squad, I don't think it compares to ours in terms of experience and in terms of depth. You know, they've got one striker pretty much, and that's it. Although some might have made the case that Olivier Giroud, we probably only have one striker. We have no excuse. You know, Manchester City having a tricky time, lost their managers on the way out. They've lost more games than they should. Manchester United have been an absolute mess, although we made them look not like it yesterday. They've got 10 players out injured at the moment, including their captain, their other main record signing. Chelsea are in 11th. Liverpool are in 9th. The league is perfectly set up for us to dominate, and yet we are incapable of it.
Yeah.
And when was the last time we didn't look like champions yesterday. When was the last time we did? Like, even when we snatched that 2-1 win against Leicester, it was a euphoric moment and a great result, don't get me wrong, but it wasn't necessarily a performance that made you think, oh yeah, you know, this is the team.
It was a 95th minute goal against 10-man Leicester.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want to take anything away from what Leicester have done or are doing, but it's Leicester. We're sitting here going, oh, we're in touching distance of Leicester now.
Exactly. And God, and you know, dare I say, Tottenham.
Yeah.
You know, we're now 3 points behind Tottenham. We're going, oh, well, you know, hopefully we can still catch them.
Yeah.
This is a side who, you know, they are, look, it pains me to say it, they're having a very good season. They have got a good team there. They've got a very good manager, it seems, who has a clear plan that he's enacting very well. But Arsenal, with the resources they have, with the experience they have, there's no excuse.
No.
There's no excuse at all.
No.
And it will be very, very difficult at the end of the season if we don't win the league, which, I'll be honest, in this season of all seasons, you can't write anything off, but I can't see us doing it.
No.
It feels improbable, certainly. And if we don't do it, how on earth will we justify that? How on earth can Arsene Wenger justify it, I suppose, is the real question.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can. You know, and you look at, actually, I don't know if anyone has seen it yet, but the brilliant Swiss Ramble has done another piece on Arsenal's finances in the wake of the financial results. Some interesting things here. Blah, blah, blah. He was talking about the next set of accounts. Depending on when transfer fee stage payments come true, Arsenal's cash reserves could be around the £225 to £250 million level. Arsenal have more cash than any other club in world football.
I mean, that's exasperating to hear, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it really is. What was the other one? Okay, at the end of the 2013-14 season, Arsenal held 40% of the entire Premier League cash balances.
I mean, what that makes me feel is that a club with that kind of financial muscle can afford no less than to be the best. Well, really?
You don't have any. You just don't have any excuses. That, you know, if your squad is not as good as it should be, or if you're not winning the title, people will say, "Okay, you've got £250 million in the bank. Why don't you have
do
a
something
squad?
About it?
Yeah,
do something about it." And that's why I think people find it so galling when Arsene Wenger is saying after the game, "Well, Manchester United spent a lot of money."
Mm.
He could have spent as much money as he wanted in the summer. He chose not to. And, you know, I don't think that was a crazy decision, but
but it, isn't it, in hindsight, isn't it?
Probably. There was a kind of skewed logic to it at the time. But when you look at, you know, we talked about the centre-forward situation, talked about the centre-back situation, we talked about the injury situation in midfield, the problems that caused. I mean, why not? Is the best question, isn't it? Mm. Why not
yeah.
spend money that you have available to
yeah.
you? What's the damage? And I think, you know, his comments after the game really wound people up. And also it's that thing of talking about mental strength and great spirit and all those things. But I mean, we've heard that for a long time. That's nothing new. And nor is our poor form, really. I think as well, if you go back to sort of Christmas time, that Boxing Day, that 4-0 defeat to Southampton. There have been brief flashes since then, but we've never really looked like a great side at all.
I don't think we've looked, you know, I don't think this season at all, we haven't really shown any significant form, you know?
No, if you think about other Arsenal sides that won the league, There's no comparison, really, in terms of the performance level, I would say.
Okay. I'm going to just rattle through this before we take a break and go into part two, right?
Okay.
So here's our form this season. Starting with the first Premier League game of the season, bearing in mind, of course, that we won the Community Shield against Chelsea. So here's our form in all competitions. Loss, win, draw, win, win, loss, loss, win, win, loss. Four wins then. Loss, win, loss, draw, loss, win, draw, four wins, loss, three wins, draw, loss, win, draw, win, win, draw, loss, loss. I mean, there's no period in that season, there's been no period where we have been consistently difficult to beat and winning more games than we have done, you know?
Yeah, we you know, this is the season of mid-table. You know, this is everyone's a mid-table team this season.
Yeah.
And we are part of that mediocrity. Let's call that part one because my doorbell's just gone.
Okay, I will go and spend a penny. We'll come back with questions and more in part two.
See you shortly.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Okay, welcome back to the Arsecast Extra on a particularly gloomy Monday. But if you do need brightening up, please check out our sponsor, cornerstone.co.uk/arseblog. You can shave better and more cost effectively by signing up to their service, and every bit helps the podcast. So thank you very much. It's cornerstone.co.uk/arseblog. James, I noticed the other day in one of your post-match videos that you had a bit of fluff stuck to your sort of beard.
So I was told, yeah. That's a risk. I mean, that's a risk. Cornerstone could have spared me that embarrassment.
Yes. Now you're immortalised as the man who had a bit of fluff on his chin.
I know. No one's looked so stupid with a beard since Theo Walcott. But there you go.
All right, we're going to do questions, right? I'm going to start, and this is a question from me to you.
Oh, right, okay.
We'll get to the listeners, don't worry. But really, if we don't win the league this season, what do you think should happen in terms of the manager?
Should happen. This is a. Can I have a little caveat to that question? Does that mean we don't win anything?
Okay. Yeah. We don't win anything.
Okay. The Champions League dream dies. I the comeback against Barcelona.
Sorry to kill that before you're stone dead there.
Shame. So I'm so looking forward to the new camp. Do you know what? I'm going to answer in a very roundabout way. I did my little post-match video where I talk about the game, and then afterwards a lot of people tweeted me or messaged me saying, you didn't mention the manager once, you didn't mention his name once. And I think it's because I am so inured, I'm so immune to the idea that he could ever go that I almost don't consider it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm so convinced that he will never be dismissed or never resign that it's almost not a consideration. It's just I always think about, well, how can we get better with Arsene Wenger? Because that's literally all I can envisage. That being said, if he doesn't win the league this year, then he certainly won't ever win the league, I would say.
At which point?
At which point, I would like to think that we had an owner ambitious enough and who cared enough about winning the league to think that that's not good enough. Now, as your reaction demonstrates, we don't have that.
No, we don't.
No. But if we did, if I was the owner, say, for example, and guys, what a chairman I would be. Oh, God, I don't want to say it.
Chairman Fluffface.
Yes, Chairman Fluffface. I'm sure Peter Hill would have some fluff on his face at some point or other in his time. Stan Kroenke's got fluff on his face. He just calls it his moustache. Mm. I think he should probably go. He won't. I can't stress enough that he won't.
Yes. No, that is the thing. I just can't see it happening. And, you know, there's this idea that a new man will come in and make everything better. That would depend entirely on who that new man is and, of course, who is selecting that new man and under what constraints that new man might have to work. You know, we like to think a new guy will come in and all of a sudden be, hey, we've got £250 million in the bank, spend it all, go crazy, do what you like. And I also, you know, I just don't think that there's a... with this board and with those people on the board... And we've spoken on this podcast and out loud, I'm sure, many times before about the lack of football people on the Arsenal board. Like, who is, out of all of them, right, the best qualified man to make a decision is Ivan Gazidis.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that you would necessarily consider Ivan Gazidis a dyed-in-the-wool football man, whatever that means. You know, it's a bit soundbitey, but, you know, to have somebody with a real background in the game. So, for example, Real Madrid have got, you know, people like Butragueño and Zidane and these kind of people on their board and on their executive committees because they understand the game, they understand football, they understand the people within the game. I'm not saying Ivan Gazidis is entirely useless in that regard, but I don't see, for example, Josh Kroenke as somebody who's got a strong voice or a strong opinion in that regard. And my fear would be that even if they would consider changing the manager, which they won't, that they would then look for another Arsene Wenger. And because that's what they know. That's the model that they know. That's what they would look for. And I don't think that that kind of a man is available in football anymore.
No, I'm not sure that they are. And of course they like him. I mean, look at those cash reserves figures. I think you can make some inferences about the Arsenal board if you look at what's happened at Aston Villa. You know, Randy Lerner took Tom Fox from Arsenal, a guy who very well placed there, an excellent executive, lovely guy. Spoke to him on a couple of occasions. Very charming, very erudite, very intelligent. But the Aston Villa fans are absolutely up in arms because he doesn't know anything about football and he's turned that club into a mess.
Mm.
And I'm not saying that everyone at Arsenal is exactly the same as Tom Fox, but it gives you some idea of the executive culture that exists at the club and the lack of football culture, potentially.
Mm.
And I think, you know, in answer to your original question, I think he probably should go if he can't win the league this year, because I think it will effectively be confirmation that he can't do it anymore. Because there, as I've said in the previous part, we have no excuse, and it's only going to get harder. Only going to get harder. There's no way that next season we're going to get another chance like this. Surely, the London City and United, maybe to a lesser extent, are going to come back roaring. And if a team like Spurs to qualify for the Champions League or win the league, they will strengthen.
Yeah.
As frightening as that prospect is. So I would definitely say possibly yes, possibly that is time to call it a day. What would you say?
Yeah, that's exactly it. But we know that it won't happen.
I mean, when you say you hold Arsene Wenger fully responsible for what happened yesterday, in mitigation, is there an extent to which you hold people above him responsible? Because ultimately, does a club not need direction from its owner? Does someone not need to say, this is who we are, this is our ambition, this is what we exist to do? And should that not come, ideally, from above the manager?
I think maybe, yeah, there could be some element of that, but when it boils right down to it, I don't think that Arsene Wenger is hugely restricted in any way. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there are restrictions on him spending. Maybe there are. I don't know. Maybe this conspiracy theory about Kroenke hoarding cash so he can afford to buy a big ranch is all true. I'm not sure I buy that. I don't think Arsene Wenger would work as a football manager, as somebody who spent all his life in the game, and as somebody who, whether he can do it or not, badly wants to win at all times. You just have to look at him to know that. I don't think he would work in circumstances where he's being told from above, well, we need to pile up all this cash so I can, you know, use it as leverage on other businesses or moving the Rams to Los Angeles. I just don't think that's the case. Now, you could make a good point about how a really determined owner, a really ambitious owner could put pressure on him to spend the money.
Mm.
And that's where I think we are. I don't think Kroenke would ever do that. I don't think Kroenke, he hasn't got a clue, right? He doesn't have the first clue about football. So he's not gonna step on the toes of Arsene Wenger and say, you should be spending money, you should be doing this, you should be doing that, because he doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. So I think it suits Kroenke to have Arsene Wenger there. Actually, Ken Early wrote a good piece in the Irish Times this morning about Arsene Wenger, why Arsenal didn't win. I'm going to just try and get it up here. But I think, you know, it's not down to Stan Kroenke why we lost yesterday, you know?
No, I think that's fair to say.
Let me just see if I can find this here.
Okay,
and there was a great line in it. He talks about how, you know, Arsene Wenger has always spoken about the financially doped clubs like Chelsea and Manchester City coming in and winning the league and how important that is. And then how Leicester have come along and shown that's not to be the case. And he says, the thing that Arsenal have lacked is not financial firepower, it's courage. And he spoke about, you know, having to strengthen the squad. He says he doesn't actually have to sign somebody better than Olivier Giroud. He just has to sign somebody better than Alex Iwobi, who is obviously a great prospect, but not somebody you throw on at Old Trafford looking for a goal. So the only reason Arsenal don't have a better centre-forward option than Iwobi is that Wenger would rather do nothing than risk making a mistake. And I think there's an element of that to the way that he looks at money and the way that he spends money.
I think that's certainly true. Certainly true. Also, I wonder what Joel Campbell's done.
I'm sure there must be a question about Joel Campbell there somewhere, or about that decision.
Let's sit on that, shall we? I mean, oh, hang on. Well, I'll give it to you now. It's from Pete Coe.
Okay.
And he says, he asked, noting Ox and Theo's dire form, where the holy fuck is Joel Campbell? Whereas Andrew House says, what do you think made Arsene choose Iwobi over Campbell to come off the bench?
I don't know. I can't understand that.
And you like Iwobi a lot.
Yeah, I think we all like Iwobi a lot. But he's a kid who's played, this was his 10th appearance. He's looked quite good at times, usually at home in the FA Cup against lower league sides, right? Because mm-hmm. that's part of his development as a footballer. That's where he is. In his development as a footballer. Yesterday, we left a guy, and I'm not a huge Joel Campbell fan, but it's hard to argue that he's done well this season. He's been creative, and he has scored some goals. Not a huge amount, but some. Iwobi has never scored in top-flight football, yet to get off the mark. We badly needed a goal, so do we leave an experienced international player who can at least contribute, who's got a decent delivery with his left foot, who almost scored in the FA Cup last week against Hull? Do we put him on to try and get a goal, or throw on Iwobi? And it smacked to me of like, oh, well, you've got a young guy who can do something. Look at my young guy, who unfortunately couldn't do anything. I don't understand the thinking behind it at all.
No.
On purely football terms, I don't get it.
That was a baffling one.
Mm.
And I do think Campbell's been rather unceremoniously dumped down the pecking order. I'm not sure. I agree with you. I don't think he's a world beater, but I think if you look at the form of the different players in that area of the pitch, I think he's been better than most.
Mm.
And yet, I think we always suspected that Arsene maybe didn't have the most faith in him, that he wasn't necessarily his man. And I think maybe we're just seeing that come home to roost now that other players are available back from injury.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about him?
We were just talking about trying to get a goal. and the fact that he was a guy that we were having to turn to try and get that goal.
The courage thing is a really good point, the one that you mentioned. And
do you think he's been like once bitten, twice shy with a couple of with some transfers that haven't worked?
Who are you thinking
worked?
Of though, like Ashavin or Reyes?
Ashavin, not so much Reyes, but even ones like Santos and Park, Chu Young, mm-hmm. you know,
and Gervinho,
you know, guys who just haven't really done it. I mean, does that speak to the scouting? Does it speak to the level of ambition that we have when it comes to transfers? Like, you couldn't tell me that there wasn't 12 million or 15 million pounds to spend better than on Gervinho at that time. Could we not have got a better player somewhere for that kind of money? And again, you come back to, well, actually money isn't, you know, when it comes to players, is not the be-all and end-all, because Mahrez went to Leicester for 400,000. It's not what you spend on them, it's what you buy and what you're capable of buying or what you're capable of identifying as a player worth spending money on.
Like, the point is, though, Arsenal are in a position where they don't even have to be at the bottom of that food chain anymore. They can let a club like Leicester pick up someone like Mahrez, and if they want to go and get him, and it's going to cost them 30 or 40 million pounds, they can absolutely do it.
Mm.
They actually, you know, they were in a position where they needed to be the guys identifying these talents. They don't even have to do that anymore. They can cherry pick. But that involves massive investment and something of a gamble.
Yeah.
Because when you lay down that kind of money, there will be pressure associated with it.
Mm.
And we know how Arsenal cope with pressure. not very well. I mean, again, we will come back to listeners' questions again, but I said I thought if he doesn't win the league, he probably should go, but he won't. Do you think if he fails to win the league this year, he won't be offered a new deal? Thus, next year will definitely be his last year? Or do you think that even if he doesn't win the league this year, he could still sign a contract extension and stay on at the club?
Well, look, you know, if he doesn't win the league, it's not like his position will become untenable. I don't think it's quite in the same situation as it would have been with the FA Cup, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Where if we hadn't won the FA Cup in 2014, I think he'd be gone. I really do.
As do I.
But given that he still has a year left of his contract, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that, you know, he stays and we buy some players in the summer and we do reasonably well and we're competitive enough and then we have a little bit of a run and then all of a sudden he becomes the only man that could ever do the job or remains the only man that could ever do the job in the eyes of the board, because it's much easier to give Arsene Wenger another contract than it is to actually, again, show some courage and try something different, try something new. And there is an inherent risk in it, because when you have a manager who's been in the club for as long as Arsene Wenger has and he's entrenched in every single corner of that football club, stadium, the training ground, the philosophy, the football philosophy of the club, you know, he has a huge impact. Mm. And when he goes, you're not talking about just one guy going. It's not like somebody getting off a bus driver getting off and the next bus driver comes on and just chugs along the same route. It's a lot more complicated than that. And I think there are implications to making a change in manager when the manager is one of those legacy managers that's been there that long, as we can see with Manchester United. And you know what? The parallels are quite frightening, because what they've got is a board. Actually, they've got a board that had Ferguson on it, and they've got Bobby Charlton on it. They've got football people on that board. They've got a chief executive who's a moron, this Woodward guy, who hasn't got a fucking clue about anything other than to keep the Glazers happy, right? So that's sort of, even with those fail-safes of having the football people on the board that United have, you know, the transition from the Ferguson years to whatever their next era is has been terrible. It's been really bad.
Yeah,
the era of complete bollocks. You know, with Van Gaal and with Moyes, it's been terrible. So in some ways, it's a frightening prospect. As much as we would like to see change, and maybe a new manager come in if Arsene Wenger doesn't win the league, but it's terrifying to think what might happen without his influence at that club, because he does not just the job of a manager, but he does he feels a little bit like the glue that holds everything together in some ways. That, you know, we can have an owner like Kroenke who's you know, doesn't care one way or the other because this is an investment vehicle and that's all it is. We can manage that because we have somebody like Wenger, for all his faults, who can hold all that together. But if we don't have a manager who's got that strength and that influence and that power, whether that power is always a good thing, what the fuck happens?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there was a story this week that Manchester United are looking to do a big restructure where they're going to bring in a director of football. You know, you wonder if Arsene was to go, would you have to undertake a similar process at Arsenal? Create a kind of hierarchy mm-hmm. that enabled those different roles to be filled? Because you're right, at the moment, he's so autonomous. He does everything, really. And I don't think one man will be able to come in and do that. And also, I don't think it's necessarily healthy for one man to come in and do that.
No.
Would you like another question?
Sure, why not?
It's no cheerier.
Okay.
I warn you. It's from Andrew Walling at A Walling, and he says, do you worry about players of the quality of Ozil and Sanchez starting to question the club's ambition?
Yes and no.
Okay, elaborate.
Well, yes, because they're top quality players and they want to win things and they realise that they've got a short career and a career is finite and in order to win things, you need to be playing at a club that's really genuinely competitive.
Mm-hmm.
No, because they're very well paid. They're at a very good club. They're living in London. They've got a nice life. You know, there are other things that tick boxes that footballers want. And as well, footballers have to take some responsibility themselves for the way that a team performs. Now, I think you could leave Mesut Ozil to one side a little bit, given his contribution this season and given where we would be, I think, if we had a clinical finisher in this side with the chances that he creates, we wouldn't be talking about being in touch with Leicester. We'd be going back to that scenario that you spoke about earlier of being way ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the others, though, I don't think anyone can really look at themselves and say, well, if this club isn't fulfilling my ambitions, it's not because of me. You know, other players haven't really performed. So they have to take some measure of responsibility for that, no?
I guess. I do slightly...
I do worry. I worry a little bit about Ozil because I think he's clinical-minded enough to say, okay, I don't think it's going to happen. Let's go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think especially with the way he was... Not forced, but the way he came out of Real Madrid, you know, he was slightly edged out by Gareth Bale. I think if a club, you know, of that Bayern Barcelona stature came in and he saw an opportunity to go and genuinely contest for the Champions League, which I don't think anyone could make an argument that we are trying to do or close to doing.
No.
Then I could understand him being very tempted by that possibility.
Mm.
Why not, ultimately? He's a talent that should be operating at that sort of level. And although we have the resource, we're you know, a long way from that.
Mm.
A long, long way.
All right, here's a question from Gunnar Punner, at Gunnar Punner. And he wants to know, very simply, is anyone in our squad irreplaceable?
Okay,
bearing in mind that we want to build a squad that's going to win the title and wants to compete in the Champions League. Ha ha.
Ha ha ha. The one that jumps out, well, there's two actually who jump out to me. One is Ozil because I do think he's a special talent and finding a number 10 who produces chances at that kind of rate
mm-hmm.
would be extremely difficult. The other one's Petr Cech.
Mm.
There are other great goalkeepers out there. I'm not sure you can buy them, basically. So those are the two who I would say.
I had five names written down.
Go on. Who else did you have?
I have Alexis, because even though he's playing really poorly, I think you need players of his quality, and we have to accept that sometimes players find themselves in periods of bad form.
Mm-hmm.
So I have Alexis. I don't think if you want to be an ambitious club, you can do without Alexis. You can add to the squad, but you've got to keep someone like Alexis. I totally agree with you in Czech. Totally agree with you on Ozil. I had Bellerin down as well.
Yeah, he was in my mind.
And I have Monreal as well. I've sort of given them a half each in a way, simply because they have been two of our most consistent players this season. Bellerin is obviously young, loads of potential, could really, really kick on in the years to come before he moves back to Barcelona, blah, blah. And Monreal, just simply because we don't have enough players like him in the team who give you that level of consistency. You know, a guy who verges between 7 out of 10 every week and 9 out of 10 every week. You know, he's a really, really solid, consistent player. And I think those are the kind of players that you need to give you a platform to go and win things. And then you have the other guys who might be a little more mercurial, but who, when they click, make the difference in the games.
Okay, yeah.
So that's those are the players that I was thinking. The rest...
You could take or leave.
You know, yeah, I mean, it's as simple as that. That there are good players. I'm not saying that there aren't good players. But if you look at the first 11, you'd be hard-pressed to say that we couldn't improve. Koscielny, maybe? Maybe? But again, maybe. A centre-half that's hitting 30 years of age.
I mean, this is sort of the inverse question. Matt Kidd at Matt Kidd says, if a new manager came in tomorrow, who would be culled?
That would depend on the manager and what his style of football was, wouldn't it?
I guess so. But there's a few names that spring to mind. I mean, there's so many questions today about, you know, Theo Walcott.
Theo Walcott, yeah. Actually, yeah, I've got a couple here. Hang on, let me just get them here. Boom, boom, boom. GK, Arteta Assist says, should we sell Theo Walcott in the summer?
Yeah.
Boom, boom, where's the other one? Steve Miller. At Meven Stiller, are we stuck with Walcott on that salary now? Is the next 10 years like this? Predict the future, please. And loads of questions about Theo Walcott. Like, who would be expendable? I mean, you look at... Like, how do you genuinely improve? You add top-class players in key positions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you also need to improve the level of the squad players.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think a new manager, if he came in, would look across the board and say that yeah, pretty much anybody is up for grabs. That if he wanted to bring in a top drawer defensive midfield player, thanks, Coquelin, it's great. I like you, but let's have this other guy, and you can compete with him.
Yeah, and then people just get shunted down the pecking order.
Yeah.
In turn, and if the man at the bottom of the chain, be that, you know, Mathieu Flamini, whoever gets bumped off the end of the line, then so be it. But that raises the overall quality of the squad. I mean, I was just thinking of Theo Walcott. I guess our only chance of selling him is if Chelsea or Manchester City need to make those homegrown quotas. I guess that's the only thing that could make him a viable asset.
Yeah, but I mean, who, in all seriousness, if you're a team like Chelsea or you're a team like Manchester City and you want to build a squad that can compete for titles, because that's what their owners are about, you know, Abramovich, for all that you might say about him, has been ambitious and ruthless. Like, he sacked a guy who won the Champions League. Because he wanted better. That's pretty fucking ruthless. Manchester City have this grand plan, this investment, that the only reason for it is to generate football success. And that's the only reason for it. So if you're one of those clubs, do you buy a guy who has perennially underachieved in practically every season that he's had at Arsenal? One season he's got into double figures. Like, who buys him? The only team that buys him is a team that's, you know, mid-table and trying to make a step up towards top four. And even that's a push. Because he's not the kind of player that drags you through games. He's a fair-weather footballer in that if things go exactly right, like if his porridge is not too hot and not too cold, then Theo Walcott is there.
Goldilocks footballer.
Yeah, but otherwise... You know, where's his character? Where's his strength of character? There isn't any. There is none. So I would certainly, if possible, sell him in the summer and bring in somebody much better. The issue is going to be who the fuck is going to buy him.
I mean, start looking, guys. Find a buyer.
Yeah.
Any more questions? I mean, I don't know how much more I've got left in the tank. This is getting me down.
I know it is. It's all a bit minging, isn't it? In fairness. Here, Fred Thurbin, he wants to know, so what's the best way of getting over games like that? A brisk walk? A comedy film? Alcohol? Going fetal and crying? Well, what's your recommendation, James?
All of the above. I think...
I watched a film last night after that. I switched off completely. It's called Bone Tomahawk.
Okay.
Starring Kurt Russell, Patrick Wilson. It's about this man whose wife is kidnapped by Indians out in the Wild West back in the day, obviously. And they have to go and rescue her. And there's some quite gruesome bits in this film. The guy gets actually chopped in half.
Oh, wow.
They kind of hold him with his legs up in the air like a big Y. And then they sort of use a tomahawk to split him right down the middle in two.
Crikey.
Which did take my mind off the football.
It will do. Mm. It will do. So that's one option.
Yeah, good comedy like that.
I went out for dinner and had some drinks and some dinner.
What did you have for dinner?
I had Mexican food.
Right.
Yeah. And a few beers. It was all right.
Yeah?
It was all right. I mean, then I came home and...
Got tonsillitis.
Exactly. So what can you do? I don't know, really. I mean, time's a great healer. I know that's a cliche, but that's all I can really say. Time hopefully will heal us all.
And the next game of football, which, of course, is on Wednesday. Okay, let's do this. Pick a team for Swansea. Pick a team.
Okay. Check.
Yes.
I think I'd probably go back to Mertesacker and Koscielny.
Yes.
With... Now, is there an obligation to rest any players, given that it's the derby at the weekend and they played Sunday as well?
You're thinking he might go Chambers instead of Bellerin?
No, I'm not that mad. But I might play Kieran Gibbs, maybe.
Right.
And give Monreal a rest. Midfield. Oh, it's a mess, isn't it? I think I would go... See, on performance, I'd like to keep Danny Welbeck in the team, but I just wonder if that would be quite a lot of football for someone who's just been out for so long. Mm. So maybe I would go from the front. I'd probably start Olivier Giroud. I'd probably have Alexis on the left.
Yeah.
I'd probably have Campbell
yes,
on the right.
I think I would too.
Ozil at number 10.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess Ramsey and Coquelin, although part of me wonders if I might rest Aaron Ramsey and put Mohamed Elneny in for a game.
Yeah, I think I could get behind the Elneny selection. You know, we bought him. We obviously saw something in him as a player. Midfield isn't functioning. Let's give him a go. Worst thing that happens is you know it doesn't really work. It couldn't like work any less than what happened yesterday at Old Trafford. So you take him off and put on Ramsey or Coquelin or whoever it is that you've taken off.
Mm.
Yeah.
What would you make any alterations to that?
Not really. I think you're right with Giroud. I'd be tempted to start Welbeck, but I didn't really consider the fitness issue. But then if he's been out for 10 months, maybe this is the time to play. Maybe you could start Welbeck up front.
But maybe.
Yeah, or Welbeck on the right.
On one of the flanks, yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I saw you wrote in your blog about maybe switching Alexis to the right for a bit just to see if it changes things for him a little.
Yeah, maybe.
That could be worth a go.
Yeah, yeah, because it's not happening for him on the left, that's for sure.
No, certainly not. Mm.
So, okay, so that's what we've come to. A brisk walk, watching somebody get cut in two with a tomahawk, some beers, some food.
Picking your team for the next game.
And picking your team for the next game and hoping that we actually turn up and win it.
Yeah.
And who else is playing on... Is it West Ham and Tottenham?
Let's have a look.
I think it could be.
So Tuesday, Leicester host West Brom.
Fresh off the back of a good win against Crystal Palace, West Brom.
Although Leicester at home, I don't know. And then Wednesday, yes, you're absolutely right. West Ham host Tottenham and Liverpool host Man City. So,
again,
that's
interesting, isn't it?
Somewhat favourable fixtures for Arsenal in terms of, you'd think West Ham and Liverpool were difficult places for those sides to go and win.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as you say, West Brom got a good result the weekend.
Did you see the West Ham goal on Saturday?
Oh, yeah.
Did you see the celebration?
Yes, bizarre.
And he said, I saw Homer do it on The Simpsons and I thought it was funny, so he just did it.
I love that.
I think that's certainly my football highlight from the weekend anyway.
Yeah, not hard this weekend. Who knows? So I can't believe I'm even doing this, but if Tottenham were to lose at West Ham, a win over Swansea would put us back level with them ahead of the derby. And we would only need to win by 11 goals, I believe, to go above them on goal difference. So.
Certainly that's going to be the case. Of course, playing Lukasz Fabianski, he'll be in goal for Swansea, having the match of his life.
I'm sure. He actually had a very good game against Tottenham, but I was ultimately undone because they do this thing where they create chances and stuff. It's a real pain.
Tottenham?
Yeah. They create them and take them. It's so alien to me.
Almost like cheating.
Yeah.
All right.
We've got to win, really, haven't we, before the weekend? We've got to try and steady the ship.
Yep. We have to. So we'll discuss that game on the Arsecast on Friday, and we can look back on a North London derby next Monday, James, on the Arsecast Extra.
I'll be on a stag do during the North London derby, but I will be watching, don't worry.
Right.
So at least I'll be able to drown my sorrows should it all go wrong.
Yes.
Or celebrate should it go right.
Yeah. Had to leave that hanging. I don't know what to say. I can't even find it within me to be, you know, vaguely optimistic about that one. But look, maybe Wednesday night will set us back on the right track. I'm sure. We'll keep fingers crossed. Anyway, I suppose for this podcast, as much as any other, we should thank the people for listening. If you've been with us throughout this hour and a bit, thank you very much indeed. I hope that we have provided some kind of catharsis or some kind of relief.
Noise. Definitely we've provided noise.
Definitely provided noise in people's ears. And, I hope people feel... Well, I don't think anyone's going to feel any better about stuff after this. But no. I hope they feel that we're all in this together as fans. We're all feeling the same pain.
Suffering together.
Indeed. All right, we'll catch you on the next one. Until then, take it easy. Have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.